And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And again, thank you to Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis, great law firm. Scott Wakefield was in the house from 2 to 3. And of course, special in-studio guest was Chris Mays, former commissioner at the Arizona Corporation Commission and ASU professor, as well as the Chris Mays Law Firm. And now, of course, if it is the second Monday of the month from 3 to 4, Understanding Autism, and all the way from Texas, Paul Loudon. Paul, how are you?
Doing pretty good, thanks.
This is great. Now, were you wondering, you flew in from Texas, and you're in the middle of a storm here in Arizona.
Yeah, the weather's a bit cooler and wetter than expected. I think you've had more rain today than my state has had in the last year. So.
Oh, my gosh. So it's a sort of a cultural shock, and that's something what we're going to talk about today. But all the way back east, probably in the snow, Kim Isaac, are you on the line?
I'm here.
Wow. So you're here, and are you snowed in somewhere?
Actually, surprisingly, there is no snow here. And every year I do this trip in December out here to Connecticut and the D.C. area, and there's always snow. So just because there's no snow doesn't mean it's not very, very cold.
How cold is it?
Well, last night it got down to 18 degrees.
18.
So right now, I mean, it's not horrible during the day. It's actually rather sunny, but it's still pretty cold.
That is cold, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Man, does it get that cold in Houston?
Oh, no.
No.
You know, maybe you'll hit freezing with the wind chill colder than that, but rarely under freezing.
Oh, my. It's pretty cold today. I think it's, what, probably in the 40s here, maybe?
I think it was actually about 55,
yeah, probably 55
on the way up here.
Yeah, it should drop tonight, but it'll be snowing and pacing. Okay, that's my weather report for today. So, Kim, we have a great show, as you know. Now, you're back east, where, in Connecticut or something?
She said Connecticut, I think.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right now I'm in Hartford. Yeah.
Hartford. Oh, very good. Say hi to the former Hartford Whalers for me, hockey team. Anyway, and of course, we have in studio Paul Loudon, coming in all the way from Houston. So, Kim and Paul, we have a great topic, something I am really interested in, understanding autism through the lens of culture. Paul, why don't you explain what that is, and we'll start the discussion.
Okay, well, I've been thinking about this for a while now, and one of the big topics for me in general, not just with relating to autism, but in general, is communication. And so I've mentioned previously on the show, I've talked about communication being sort of in three parts. There's the explicit verbal, it's what we say. The explicit nonverbal, that's facial expressions, body language, things like that. Things we often attempt to teach people on the spectrum to help them better pick up the things they aren't picking up. And then I have a third part that I think of as just the implicit, the things that when you're communicating, they're everything you don't say at all because you expect them to already know. So there's a lot of things that qualifies that, but what it comes down to is the context you're holding the discussion in. If you say good job to someone and they've just done something genuinely good, it's clear that it's a compliment. If you say it to them and they've just done something kind of stupid, it's clear that it's some sort of sarcasm, even if you say them both in the same tone of voice. So the context creates the communication.
And that totally makes sense to me, of course, and I won't mention the word NLP, but I did, neuro-linguistic programming. Now, before we actually continue, I should mention Paul Loudon, not only from Houston, Texas, but 28.
Eight.
Yeah, and has been on the spectrum.
Well, I've been on the spectrum my whole life, but I was diagnosed at 23.
That's right, 23, and of course, Kim Isaac, RDI specialist, and traveling all over the country to help a whole bunch of people. So, just wanted to mention that. So context-related communication is what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I came up with the idea of the implicit communication, how it's all about context, what you expect people to know. And what this led me to think about is you know, what is context? What do we think about? Context is – part of context is what words mean, the language itself. So the explicit verbal comes back to context. Then I thought, well, and body language is different. A nod in one country might mean a negative response rather than a positive one. So the explicit nonverbal is also about context, that every part of communication in one way or another is about context. And that led to how do we develop context? How do we know what context is? And I started thinking about the word culture, that what communication is based on culture, that the meaning of a sentence can be different based on what kind of culture you grew up in, the meaning behind everything, whether you think something is a good idea or a bad idea, whether it's acceptable to live with your parents past 18, whether you know you have big family dinners or everyone just does their own thing, that all is sort of a culturally developed thing.
That totally makes sense. Cultural beliefs, what's sort of built into the fabric of the culture, what's acceptable and unspoken. And Kim, how have you seen this play out in your life?
Well, you know, my experience in working with people on the spectrum, I like the way that Paul has summed it up in words that we can relate to not being on the spectrum. And, you know, what I've seen is that this communication factor in relation to context is that people who are developing, typically, they learn to assess the context, you know, of a situation differently than a person on the spectrum does. So therefore, you could say that, you know, people on the spectrum essentially have developed a different culture based on what they experience. And so I can relate to what Paul's saying on a professional level, you know, and also just on a personal level, it might help people to relate to, you know, people they know of other cultures. I know Paul and I have spoken about, too, in our family, we have, people of Puerto Rican descent, and it's been interesting learning about what's important to them and what they focus on versus, you know, what I focus on as a person or some of the family focuses on. So, you know, I think it's a way of thinking about people and understanding that we all have taken in different pieces of information, partially based on culture. And I think it's an important thing for parents who have children on the spectrum to think about, to help sort of maybe understand their kids of any age better, and also for professionals to think about too.
So what you're saying is don't just assume everyone knows the implicit built-in communication part of it. Like Paul, you were saying, just don't assume that because maybe people will, they either don't have that frame of reference in which to decode that meaning. Is that right, Paul?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's one of the points I'm going to sort of get to is that a lot of us have dealt with other cultures. Here in Arizona, you've probably met a lot of Hispanics, and they have different approaches to things, different ideas about things. A lot of them come from a Catholic background, which can lead to certain ideas, things like that. There's just a lot of different – I mean, there's not one single Hispanic culture, but there's a lot of different assumptions you make about Hispanic people. And if you run into a misunderstanding, you'll often think, well, they're from a different culture. Maybe I should take a step back and think about how they might have understood what I said. It's a tool that we've sort of learned to develop as we interact with other cultures. One of the big frustrations with dealing with someone on the spectrum is, why don't they understand me? Why don't they get what I'm trying to say? And if we look at it through that tool of, wait, they may be a bit – they have developed a different culture, it gives us the ability to take that step back and go, okay, so what do they mean? Let's try thinking about this outside of my own culture.
So what you're saying, it's from judging to more observation and understanding.
Yeah. I mean, the goal obviously is to remove the assumptions, but I think – one of the big things with someone on the spectrum is that you may have assumptions you don't realize you have because you grew up around them or they grew up around you or, you know, they come from the similar background to you. So you expect them to have similar cultural developments that may not be there. And I'm going to go into after the break probably is that, you know, some of the core deficits of autism itself relate to how culture develops in a person. I don't want to say there's a specific autistic culture, but rather that this helps them diverge from the culture around them.
Totally makes sense. Why don't we take a quick break right now, and you're listening to Understanding Autism with, in studio, Paul Loudon, all the way from Houston, Texas, and across the country in Connecticut, Kim Isaac, and we'll be right back talking about understanding autism through the lens of culture. Very, very important. There's explicit language, explicit nonverbal communication, and as Paul said, implicit language. What are you assuming to be true to make it true, at least for you? And we'll be right back.
At Birenbaum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hello, this is Michael Dixon. Internationally acclaimed Metropolitan Opera baritone Dmitri Varostovsky will perform a one-time-only opera gala concert with the Phoenix Opera Orchestra and Chorus Tuesday, January 10th at the Orpheum Theater. We've seen the sensational singer in the Met's live HD broadcasts. Now hear him live in concert January 10th. It'll be the musical event of the season. Get tickets now at the Orpheum box office and at phoenixopera.org.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offer in compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. And, of course, we have in studio Paul Loudon all the way from Texas, a young gentleman, 28 years old, who was diagnosed on the spectrum at 22, you said?
23. Well, and right between 22 and 23.
22 and 23. And of course, Kim Isaac, RDI specialist, in Connecticut, calling in from maybe a little bit higher than 18 degrees, but at least it was that last night. Kim, you still there, right?
I'm still here.
Oh, you're laughing at my introduction, aren't you? Okay. Anyway, now I don't even hear her. Oh, there you are.
I was.
That's what I thought. Are you watching us on the computer, by the way?
You know, I'm not. I actually have a fire going. I'm watching the fireplace.
You're home in front of a fire, all cuddly and cozy, and we're in the cold.
Wait a minute. I think you got that a little twisted here.
Oh, I don't know. Sounds good to me.
I'm not at home. I wish I was there. I miss you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be in the studio. No, it's really quite mandatory to have a fire, I have to say, or I'd be unable to speak. My mouth would be frozen.
Sure. Well, what about the fire and the roasted marshmallows and the hot chocolate? Come on. What's going on there?
Oh, well. Anyways.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk.
We'll save that for later.
Yes. Core deficits, Paul. You were going to talk a little bit about that.
What I wanted to talk a little bit about is actually more about how culture develops. That culture is, in a sense, it's your values. It's sort of what you consider to be regular or normal. It's what you're used to. And a lot of how you develop culture when you're young is just what your parents are like or what your caregiver is like. You know, do they think that this is good food or bad food? Do they think that this is a good idea or a bad idea? You pick up a lot of your values subconsciously, just from observation. And as Kim has talked about several times, the primary job of a child is observation, watching what parents do, watching what makes them laugh, reacting to when they see their parents being happy or sad, and feeling sort of empathetic and emotional responses to that expression of happiness or sadness. Unfortunately, as we've talked about with the core deficits before, being on the spectrum often means that you aren't having the same kind of responses to what's going around you. So one could partially describe this part of the core deficit as a resistance to picking up culture. Rather than just picking up what's around you, you may diverge from what would be normal. I guess I don't want to say normal, but diverge from what one would probably expect someone to pick up in that sort of environment and upbringing.
Well, because people on the spectrum end up observing different things than a typically developing person. So, yeah, Paul, I mean...
Yeah, they get different inputs.
They get different inputs, and therefore, you know, based on the input they're receiving, their output's going to be different. Because here we are, if we're the caregiver or the parent, we are assuming that they are observing what we're intending. But if they're not observing what we're intending, people aren't realizing that. And that's where a lot of communication breakdowns and misunderstandings happen. So a parent or caregiver may think, oh, my child just doesn't like me or love me. You know, and I've heard that a lot from parents. And it's hard because that's actually not the case. It's just the fact that the parent had, you know, was focused on a particular, you know, piece of information or communication, and they didn't realize that their child was not on that same page with them.
And that's part of why this idea of thinking about it through the concept of culture is so important, because we get frustrated in any interaction when we don't get the response we expect. If there's an expectation, then that creates the opportunity for us to be frustrated. Often, when we're dealing with someone of a different culture, for example, when I lived overseas in Indonesia, we finally got a Baskin Robbins, which was amazing. And they quickly ran out of ice cream. And we asked them, well, when are you going to have more ice cream? And they would say, 2 more weeks. 2 weeks later, we go back by, no more ice cream. 2 more weeks. We learned that 2 more weeks was a cultural expression of, don't know, no clue, sometime in the future. So on another occasion, we had a stereo system that broke, and we took it to the electronic person. They said, well, we need a part, and it was, when it'll get here, 2 weeks. At that point, we weren't frustrated this time, because we knew that 2 weeks didn't mean 2 weeks. It meant, I don't know. So the ability to understand, to look at a culture and think, how is this different, and understand the differences gives you the opportunity to replace frustration with understanding. And while people on the spectrum don't have a single culture, I can't tell you people on the spectrum are going to react to this way, because being on the spectrum means that you're interpreting inputs differently. So how you grew up still affects what kind of culture you develop. It just means that you saw different things than the other people around you saw, so you probably developed a different personal culture than those around you would expect you to have. So if we stop and take a step back, and any time we're dealing with someone on the spectrum, we are able to stop and go, well, it doesn't necessarily mean what he says it means, and use those tools we use for dealing with other cultures to deal with people we would normally think of as probably our own culture, it can help reduce the frustrations we feel when dealing with them and reduce the frustrations when they feel when dealing with us. And, I mean, it'd be nice if we did this for everyone, that, you know, you stop and think, this person probably thinks differently. But if we could do that for everyone, we wouldn't develop culture the way we do. It gives us shortcuts and tools that are helpful most of the time. If you know that someone is going to take thumbs up as a positive response, you don't have to stop and every time you meet a new person say, okay, before I do this, thumbs up means good job. It gives us useful shortcuts for day-to-day life. And knowing when not to use these shortcuts is another important tool, which is – and this is one of these cases.
Now, Kim, let me ask you a question. Is how important is it that parents understand what Paul just communicated? Because it really seems to me that it's a critical – parents or caregivers, you know, it's a critical element to understand – that it's possible that these core deficits, like you said, people on the spectrum may see things differently. And if you just take it to assume they mean it the way you mean it, that's going to be a problem in communication, isn't it?
Very much so. And the problems I've seen as a result of that, well, one thing I need to sort of give this disclaimer, even parents who do understand, sometimes it's hard to remember in the moment, especially with a person who looks, you know, as Paul said, you know, families of whatever culture, physically, people with autism, you know, they look, you know, just like they're supposed to look. There's no physical, you know, abnormalities or anything like that. And especially for people who speak very well, who are intelligent, their parents may be looking at them despite knowing, okay, I understand this disorder, but the feedback they're getting from this person could easily kind of sway them in the moment. And what happens, though, if parents have a hard time being mindful of that, is a lot of frustration definitely escalates on the part of the parent and a lot of times the individual on the spectrum. It can lead to the individual feeling very incompetent as a partner and therefore causing more withdrawal or, on the other side, much more anxiety. Nobody's going to be perfect, first of all, interactions are very dynamic. You know, even in the best of situations, you know, we run into misunderstandings. That's just part of it all. But I think when it comes to autism, it's very important to really put that in the forefront of your mind for the benefit of the development and the development of processing abilities for your child, you know, of any age. And actually, I have a question for Paul.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm just wondering if you can share about how your, not just awareness, but your experience of all of this, how that's affected your own personal growth.
You know, that's kind of difficult to answer because, okay. Well, for one thing, I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about when you say my awareness of all of this. Do you mean
I'm sorry. That was pretty vague.
That's broad scope.
Sorry about that. What I mean is, okay, your awareness and experience of people stepping back to understand you and you them.
I would say that ever since I was diagnosed with Asperger's, I started going... You know, the first thing I sort of learned about it is that I would understand things differently than other people, that I would probably interpret things differently. And so that's when I started trying to step back. And it created some new frustrations because then I was really trying to understand things, and that can be difficult when you're dealing with people who think a different way than you do. But it did allow me to develop a lot of personal tools because I really started being more analytical about what was going on around me. I thought, okay, so... You know, people tend to interpret this sentence a different way than I normally mean it because of this mismatch. And so it gave me a lot of tools for developing a way to communicate with the general culture around me. So I would say that it was very helpful. I hadn't really – I mean, back then I hadn't thought of it in these terms at all because I just wasn't that far along. But even as soon as I was diagnosed, the first thing I found myself doing was really trying to do what I'm sort of advocating now, realize the disconnect and take a step back from it rather than being frustrated by it.
So I have one more question that's related. So on that note, what about, if you can you make a distinction between when people approach communications with you in that manner versus when they don't and how that affects you?
I feel like I typically can. I don't know for certain. Obviously, if I'm missing it, then I wouldn't know that I missed it. So that's a little difficult. But I think that that a lot of times when someone is approaching you with assumptions versus approaching you trying to put aside assumptions, you can see a difference in a way both that they choose what to say and they tend to be more thoughtful about what you've responded. They stop and give it a second to say, did it mean exactly what I thought it meant? Let me just double check before I respond to them. So I think that a lot of times there are some signs that someone's trying.
And how does that affect you, though? I mean, do you appreciate that? Can you recall, like, what your thoughts are when someone engages with you that way?
I do appreciate it. I mean, it makes things easier. So, and I think that's one of the key parts here is that hopefully – obviously it's going to be hard a lot of times for people on the spectrum, depending on what level they're functioning at, to do this sort of thing themselves. But hopefully if those around them are able to do some of this, it can decrease frustration on both sides. And this can really improve the opportunity for therapy and other things because you're removing some of the barriers that get in your way when you're trying to help someone.
And I think the person being helped is much more trusting and willing to listen to what their partner is trying. Like you said, the opportunity it creates to think about something differently that someone presents is much more likely than if you're communicating with a person who's not of that similar mindset.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is often a feeling of, especially if you don't understand that you're on the spectrum or if you don't understand what being on the spectrum means, there's often a feeling when communicating with someone who's really just working on assumptions that I personally must be doing something wrong if they're not understanding what I'm saying, that I'm screwing up here if they're getting upset because I didn't think anything I said should be upsetting. So it helps a lot also just with that if they're willing to take that step back and rethink things because it removes some of this, oh, I'm doing something wrong, what do I do feeling that you get.
And that's something I see a lot. I see a lot of when there's that kind of communication breakdown or the assumptions, that's kind of the things that have been reported to me is the individual on the spectrum will feel bad about themselves. It's like, so the opposite person, you know, the partner is basically assuming that this person is choosing not to see the same things or, you know, just being combative or protestful or something like that, when really it's a matter of that person may genuinely not be on that same page as you. And that's where the person on the spectrum could develop, you know, even feelings of depression and, you know, again, that anxiety of, oh, my gosh, I'm always going to upset people. I can't quite get it right, you know. And it is a setback because the brain energy for that person then focuses on all of those feelings and worries versus opening up their mind to actually learning and receiving, you know, the things that they're supposed to be processing. So I think that's really important.
That totally makes sense. And let's take a quick break right now. You're listening to Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. I don't know why I have fall on my mind, but it's so cold. It's winter. Anyway, 3 to 4 every Monday and Tuesday. And we have Paul Alden in studio. Kim Isaac is in Connecticut. A warm fire, maybe hot chocolate. I don't know. We'll ask her when she comes back.
Hello, this is Michael Dixon. Internationally acclaimed Metropolitan Opera baritone Dmitri Varostovsky will perform a one-time-only opera gala concert with the Phoenix Opera Orchestra and Chorus Tuesday, January 10th at the Orpheum Theater. We've seen the sensational singer in the Met's live HD broadcasts. Now hear him live in concert January 10th. It'll be the musical event of the season. Get tickets now at the Orpheum box office and at phoenixopera.org.
At Birenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hey. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism every Monday and Tuesday. Every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. We have Paul Loudon in studio, Kim Isaac in Connecticut. Hopefully warmer than 18 degrees. I don't know. Hey, there's a thing called 18 degrees at the den. What is it called? The ice den in Scottsdale. Did you know that, Kim? I guess not. Where'd Kim go?
Kim, you there?
Oh, there she is.
Sorry. It was 18 degrees last night, not during the day.
Oh, good. So at least it's
I
a little...
I have to represent appropriately, but...
Yeah, you got to represent Connecticut. Okay. Now, there is something you said, and then we're going to get into a couple other... really elaborate a little bit more why this is very important and how it can be useful in everyday life. There's something
and
you mentioned...
I have a question, too, for
Oh, good. Okay. Well, let me ask you this. You said, you know, even though parents can have the best of intentions, they may feel a little upset if they don't understand this, saying, wait, why does my, you know, kid not like me because I have the best of intentions. And, you know, there was something that I've mentioned, I think, on the show before, is the meaning of communication is the response you get. And that really relates to intention. So I think if parents and caregivers and anyone communicating really takes that to heart. The meaning of communication is a response you get, meaning you could have the best of intentions, but maybe there's something else you got to look for. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, Kim?
Yeah, I mean, it does. And I think to add to that, you know, sometimes it's not even, you know, that specific feeling of, oh, my kid doesn't love me or like me, but it's also a matter of why aren't they doing the things that they're supposed to do, you know, in the mind of the parent or the caregiver or the friend or the grocery worker, you know. Mm-hmm. It's confusing to the mind for a person, you know, to see someone respond differently than what would be expected. And truthfully, probably on both sides. I would imagine that the person with autism feels that same thing. It's sort of like, well, wait, what? You know, that's not exactly what I was asking.
Well, I mean, any time your expectations aren't met, you tend to feel frustration. I had one sort of an example of something like this is think about you have a car and your engine's sort of making a whirring noise and you aren't really sure what that noise means because whether you know anything about cars or not here, let's pretend you know nothing about cars. If you ask your neighbor, hey, my car's making this whirring noise, any idea? And he just says, you know, I've got no idea. You probably are okay with that. But if you know your neighbor is, say, a mechanic who works on cars and he says, nah, I got no idea, you know he's just blowing you off. That the context of that situation creates expectations in you that cause you to be frustrated when you wouldn't otherwise. And when you've raised a kid and you've seen how he was raised and you think he was raised like me or he was raised just like his brother, maybe as a brother or a sibling, you have expectations about the kind of things that they'll pick up while you're raising them. And so it can be hard to put those aside. And that creates a lot of frustration, and that's part of why this is so important is because if you're trying to help someone on the spectrum, if you're going into it and you're already frustrated because they aren't doing what you want, or if you're trying to teach them something or explain something to them or help them through a therapy process of some sort and they aren't getting it and you're having these expectations that they should or that they should react a certain way, if you're getting frustrated, it doesn't help the treatment. And so, you know, on first thought, saying, okay, well, we can understand them through this culture, but why is that really important? We're trying to cure them here. But part of the issue is no matter how you're trying to help, better understanding means the whole process goes better. And the next step beyond that is that even if we were to cure everyone on the spectrum, if tomorrow someone invented a pill that you could take once and the physical aspects of it, the differences in brain functioning or the differences in other genetic functioning or whatever, anything that we could cure, you would still have people who spent 10, 20, 50 years growing up seeing different things and thinking in different ways. Whether or not you solved the biomedical and physical aspect, you would have people who were still a different culture, and you would still need these tools for interacting with them and maybe acclimatizing them to being a neurotypical person or interacting. So whether we cure it ever or not, this tool is useful on both sides of that.
Oh, I love it. He's so brilliant. No, I'm just proud of you. I am. I have to give that disclaimer because I think I'm just excited that you not only have come to this awareness over time, but what you're saying is so helpful. particularly when you just said better understanding it makes the process go better. And that is true, and you're right. And I've, you know, this has come up a lot when I consult with parents. It's like, you know, there is such a focus on a cure. And unfortunately, maybe unfortunately, I know that sounds weird, but there is no cure. And I think what that means, regardless of a cure or no cure, this is a process that needs to be employed, which is better understanding of people, especially when it's your family members. And this could be just my own, you know, personal bias towards family, but, you know, people on the spectrum have a lot of struggles out in the world. So they have struggles with people that don't know them. They have struggles decoding people that they don't know. And I think it means a lot when family members and, you know, close people to the family make that effort to understand and work through a process like this in order to really teach what the value of relationships are. You know, sometimes it's like hard to understand why, you know, why do I need to learn to be social? Why do I have to change? Why, you know, that sort of thing. And I think when you develop relationships that are balanced and supportive, it makes it easier for the person on the spectrum to want to engage. That's my thought. What do you think, Paul?
I would say so. I think, though, that a lot of times when you develop a relationship like that where it's balanced, as you said, you don't feel the need to change because it's balanced. I mean, that you don't have as many rough points, as many points of friction that are creating the issues, and that can help minimize the necessary changes and make them less frustrating.
Right. So I was going to ask you, this kind of relates to the question I asked prior to the break, so I hope this isn't too redundant, but I don't think I really asked all I wanted to ask, but
okay.
I guess what I'm trying to convey, or I would like to try to convey to listeners, is, you know, some people on the spectrum, you know, some of the parents or professionals listening, they may be working or knowing somebody that doesn't have the verbal communication skills that you have. And I was just wondering if you could describe, you know, maybe in a little bit of detail, what it means to you and how it helps you move forward when a person takes the time to understand you and communicate in that fashion.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I get stuck on things easily. If there is a miscommunication, if there's a spot where I'm frustrated and I don't know what happened and I don't know why there was this miscommunication, I don't know why they got upset with me or I don't know what I did wrong, I will probably lose focus on wherever the conversation is going and continue thinking about what just happened. How do I fix this? So when you're working with someone who is able to themselves take the step back, and so you work past it from both sides because they can talk with you about it or tell you it's okay or realize that something has happened and help the process move beyond it, then that means that my getting stuck is less likely. So from a perspective like that is that if the other side is able to be aware of a problem and sort of help divide the problem between two people rather than saying you did something wrong, it can really help keep things from getting stuck.
Right.
So are you...
I think that's important, too. I mean, I think... And I guess my perspective's a little... We all have really great perspectives to share here. And one thing I've seen is for people with children, adults, you know, any age of person on the spectrum, you know, for people that can't express themselves well, you know, just to be mindful of the fact that that doesn't mean they're not feeling stress or stuckness because they're not expressing it in the way that, again, we would assume or expect.
And that's a very good point, actually, is that culture isn't just about how they interpret what you say, but it's also about how they express the things that they feel. So
right. It's
key to remember that culture is two-way.
Right. And on the spectrum, what I've noticed, I just had this experience recently, and it was really eye-opening. But I work with a 20-year-old young man who has a lot of trouble speaking, and his face pretty much never changes. I mean, he smiles on occasion, but by looking at him, you would make an assumption that he's just either unhappy or disinterested. You know, it's a very flat affect with not a lot of change in the face. Well, he recently started writing back and forth to people because speaking is very hard for him. And when I saw him, we have this, like, amazing written conversation about feelings that never in a trillion years would I have thought he was having in the moment based on what he was presenting. His face and what he was thinking were totally different things, and I have assumed, based on what he's showing me, totally wrong things, totally off things. So it was kind of an eye-opener to me on another level of people who are unable, you know, for one, people who are unable to verbalize things clearly, and on the other note, it's just remembering with autism, there may be a big disconnect or mismatch between even things like facial expressions and what thoughts and feelings are really happening. So I think that's another important thing to be mindful of if you're a family member or, you know, however you're involved with the person on the spectrum, to not just, you know, definitely cannot make assumptions with this population. That's the bottom line. You really can't, because it's pretty frequently, even now, after 15 years of working with this population, I get surprised, not about the concepts or the theories, but about the actual practice of interacting with people and learning about people and noticing where these disconnects happen.
And I think that's part of why this can be helpful, and I think we're about time for a break. But when we come back, I have a few ideas about how this can be helpful even when talking with people who don't know anything about autism, to help them, say, introduce your grandparents to your child who has just been diagnosed, and now you need to talk with them about what that means. So,
and we will come back in just a couple minutes after a few words. This is Understanding Autism with Paul Alden and Kim Isaac every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. We're talking about understanding autism through the lens of culture. Very interesting topic. But more than that, it's very helpful to both sides. If you're on the spectrum, if you're not, if you're a parent, a caregiver, very helpful. And we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Michael Dixon. Internationally acclaimed metropolitan opera baritone Dmitri Varostovsky will perform a one-time-only opera gala concert with the Phoenix Opera Orchestra and Chorus Tuesday, January 10th at the Orpheum Theater. We've seen the sensational singer in the Met's live HD broadcasts. Now hear him live in concert January 10th. It'll be the musical event of the season. Get tickets now at the Orpheum box office and at phoenixopera.org.
At Beerenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hey, And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism with Paul Alden and Kim Isaac. And we've been talking about understanding autism through the lens of culture. Very, very interesting, talking about there's explicit language, there's explicit nonverbal, such as body language, and implicit language. What's built in from a society or cultural basis that you assume everyone knows? That's just not the case. And Paul, I know you want to talk a little bit more, you know, how could this be helpful to, like, grandparents and other people and how they relate?
Well, autism, just the word autism, is a very intimidating word. When you think about autism, you think about where you've seen it in movies or whatever, someone with usually severe disabilities, because it's easiest to show something that's very visible. But the important thing about this is that it gives us tools to talk about what autism means without necessarily having to use the language of autism and therapy and things like that. You can go to your grandparents. If you have a child with autism and you want to introduce it to grandparents who don't know anything about it, you can go to them and initially you can talk about, you know, this is my child. Autism means that he acts in different ways. And talk about the culture of your child. Tell them stories about what's actually happened, how your child showed that he was happy by doing this, or how he got frustrated by this sort of thing. So you can talk about your child's personal culture and frame it in the language of culture and compare it to maybe examples of other cultures in the real world, differences in personal space. In other countries, they may have different ideas of personal space, and your child does too. You can relate it to things that they may have more experience with and maybe less intimidating than autism and therapy and you know, developmental disability. Words like that can leave someone intimidated, where this language can help sort of ease the transition into deeper stuff while giving immediate tools for how to help or deal with someone on the spectrum.
So it really sounds like you're creating a meaning that they can understand and use, rather than letting them have their own meaning of what they think autism is, which could be dangerous.
The hope is to just give easier, simple tools for talking about it so that you can get moving more easily.
And Kim, how helpful would that is that from your perspective?
I think that would be really helpful for a lot of reasons. I mean, one is, you know, it's important that not only the immediate family or the people who live with the person understand them, but, you know, this time of year, it's holidays, there's a lot of potential family gatherings, and a lot of times it's very stressful for parents and their kids on how are we going to explain why he does this, or, oh no, I hope he doesn't do this, or there's a lot of stress. And I think parents can think about something like this ahead of time and really use it to their benefit to ease their own anxiety and to promote a more laid back, you know, peaceful feeling in the house when people do come over. Additionally, just, you know, out of respect for their child, you know, a lot of times, like I said previously, a lot of misunderstandings occur. Like, oh, this child just doesn't want to be with people. Or, well, that may be true. A lot of times it's really because there's a lack of understanding. And so it would be great for the person on the spectrum to have an opportunity to be involved, you know, in whatever the family's doing, because there's a clear sort of same page thinking on everything.
So it really sounds like it. What Paul and Kim, what you're saying, is it bridges the gap of understanding. It really connects people in a more profound way.
I mean, that's what I'm hoping for describing this way, is just to use words and ideas people already know to think about new things that they actually do apply to.
Totally makes sense. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Kim.
I was just agreeing with that, and I think there's a lot more we could probably even talk about on this subject. But I like the idea, again, of using the most user-friendly language. A lot of information is out there on, you know, different therapies and different this and that, and there's medical terms. And, you know, I'm guilty of it, too. I'm in the psychology field, and I get caught in my own fancy terminology, and sometimes I'm thinking, wait a minute, okay, these people didn't go to school for what I went to school for, and I need to make this more understandable for the benefit of the individual and the family. So I think this is a really great concept.
Well, a couple of things I noted down. It's almost been an hour of this great topic, but bridging the gap, always a good thing if you can bridge a gap.
Mm-hmm.
Also give, I think something, Paul, you said is give time and space. And, you know, that means a little more patience, a little more awareness, a little more understanding. Give time and space to someone on the spectrum, because you did mention sometimes if there's some misunderstanding, you go inside to start thinking about, wow, what did I miss? Or I think that would be helpful to you.
Yeah, and it's often helpful that both sides can recognize there's a misunderstanding so that you can work through it rather than leaving one side stuck there.
Totally makes sense. A couple other things that it seemed to pop out at me is, you know, the fact that we need behavioral flexibility, meaning don't just get stuck in your own position, but there are other ways to think of things. And, you know, first position coming from your own self, but really, you know, second position, you know, how does the other person think? And if you can gain that awareness, how useful would that be?
Oh, absolutely.
Phenomenal.
Well, it's important in life, and it's also important in typical development. You know, development, social and emotional, and cognitive development actually happens twice. First, through the eyes of interactions with caregivers, like we've talked about, the primary job is to be an observer. That actually developmentally happens first, before a person develops their own sense of self. And if you can imagine that first piece being altered in some way or didn't happen, that what the person is perceiving is very different, because it is a different developmental progression. So, I just think the importance of thinking about what we're thinking about and understanding the differences in the culture of autism is going to be helpful for the benefit of the development of the individual.
And Paul, you mentioned it. These are really tools how to think.
Yeah, this is a mental tool set that is helpful when dealing with anyone, knowing when to take that step back and ask if something is different, is from a different culture, but specifically really helpful with someone on the spectrum.
And it seems to me if you can look through the lens of understanding versus the lens of frustration, both sides have to benefit enormously. It will increase one's awareness and especially maybe compassion.
Oh, absolutely.
And Kim, that's what you are so amazing at, the compassion, the lens of understanding. That's what makes you the top, and I mean the top person, really helping people in really miraculous ways.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think everybody in life, I mean, life is too short not to take the time to think. I mean, to think and to communicate with others and to help each other grow healthfully. I mean, it's hard at times, you know, it tests my patience, but, you know, I have to say the rewards of helping someone come to their own awareness or change family relationships or, you know, confidence in a person, to me, that's what, you know, my purpose is. And so the real question is, real fast, you guys miss me in the studio?
Yes, we do.
Of course we do.
Yes, we miss you, and we want next time to build a fire here. Okay.
Wait a minute. Does Paul notice a difference with me on the phone versus in studio?
Not different? Much.
I knew it. I know. It's cool.
You knew what I was going to say.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I did. I just wanted to see. But anyway, I'm thinking that tomorrow, I would like to continue this topic, actually. And I had a few more ideas. I was taking notes as we were talking. I would love to continue this topic tomorrow.
I'm okay with that.
That's okay. I'm okay, too. And Paul,
we'd love you to give us feedback on facebook.com/understandingautismradio. Good idea, bad idea? Do you have some additions to this idea? I'd love to hear from you.
And you can get the podcast there.
Yeah, or searching iTunes for Understanding Autism.
Excellent. Well, Kim Isaac, thank you. We'll see you, or not see you, but we'll hear from you tomorrow from 3 to fall.
3
to fall. I keep saying 3 to fall. I can't believe it. Paul, thank you for coming in. I'll see you tomorrow from 3 to 4. And everyone have a great night. See you tomorrow with Understanding Autism. Have a great night.